This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning.
We are finally in spring here in Montana. Thank the Lord that we finally can look out the window and not see snow everywhere.
Does it stick?
Yeah, I think it's going to stick.
Arnie, you saw some elk this morning out the window.
There were about 90 elk right across the road from where Scott and I live. There were just a whole herd of them just grazing and
gazing.
We're going to be talking about gaze today with Ken Fickler from Gaze Technology Company that's engaged in cannabis and other kind of monitoring and regulatory kind of influence. So we'll hear all about that. We were supposed to have a different show this week, Scott.
What was it?
This week we were supposed to talk about your New York activity and the excitement of, you know, we have not revealed all of that to our listeners.
But it's out.
Do we want to give them a little tickler on that?
Yep. Well, our book, The Art of the Straight Line, My Tai Chi by Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson, came out on March 24th. And we are out worldwide on HarperCollins.
And what role did you play in this
book? I am one of the editors of this book, Arnie. Thank you.
Yes, and his name is right there in the spotlight. And we're going to do a whole show about it.
I hope so, yes.
But we have a guest that this week thought was important to share his business story and the creation of his new company. Just launched, just got funded, just moving into you know, their first sales activity, and we thought it was an interesting area to focus on, where they're starting, at least, from the cannabis arena and monitoring whether you're impaired or not by imbibing cannabis.
I know. Ken Fickler is his name. He is the CEO.
Yes, and so he's going to be joining us. He used to be the head of economic development of the state of Montana during the last term of the Bullock administration.
I was going to ask how you knew him, Arnie.
Yeah, he was.
Is it through that?
He spent 4 years working in the governor's office as the lead economic development person in the state. So he has a good handle on what's happening around Montana in that arena, and had a commitment, I believe, we'll hear about it, to starting his own business, and this is the one he chose to help start and be the leader of, and it's a fascinating work that he's doing.
Yeah, it's a great industry, too, and it's nice to know that he's headquartered here in Missoula, Montana, or in Montana.
Yes.
And he's building a company.
Right, Gaze, G-A-I-Z-E.
.AI.
.AI, if anybody's going to go look it up before we bring Ken on and talk to him.
Okay, we will be right back after these words with Ken Fickler, CEO of Gaze. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, CEO of Gaze, Ken Fickler.
Ken, how are you?
Doing well. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to see you again. Last time I saw you, you work in the governor's office, heading up economic development for the state of Montana during the Bullock administration. And now you're in the cannabis world. And share with our listeners, what are you actually involved with in cannabis?
Yeah. Those were good times. So I really became exposed to the problem I'm now working on while in the Bullock administration, actually. And so what we've created, is a product that can detect impairment from cannabis. So we're not a cannabis company. We are a company that has produced a product that can work for enforcement and trying to prevent impaired driving and working.
And you're in the seed stage of it, and you just received in November $1.2 million in seed funding to move the process along. Am I correct?
It was actually March of 22. Yeah. So that allowed us to do kind of all the work we did last year.
I got confused between March and then in November, was it where you completed the study of 300? That's where I got confused.
Yep. So we did the clinical trial in November.
And largest clinical trial ever in the cannabis field.
So ever
50 participants.
Yeah.
And what were you trying to figure out during that study?
So the way our product works is we measure how eye movement changes in response to cannabis impairment and other drug impairment. And so what we were doing in the study really was getting people high and watching how their eye movement changes using our instruments.
Field studies.
Where you were you? Didn't call us. You didn't call us about it because we like the
called as impairment, and there are many ways that you can become impaired. And
did you conduct these studies?
We actually conducted it in Toronto, Ontario, because cannabis is federally legal in Canada, and so we had a much, much easier regulatory path. It was much cheaper for us to do it there, and so, you know, from our perspective, early stage company, we went where it was most affordable to do, which was Canada.
How do you determine what strain of marijuana and cannabis you use? Is it an indica or a sativa? Is it a hybrid?
Yeah, it was actually all over the map. We had we had any strain somebody wanted. So we actually had the consumers go out and buy recreationally available cannabis and bring it to the study. And so whatever they wanted, we wanted people to have whatever they tolerated, because there's actually some intolerances that can happen. And
this sounds like the best study I've ever heard of. Go out and buy recreational cannabis and come on in.
We can literally field a study in Missoula. Especially if you pay them. Wait a minute. So, Arnie, I know you have a question, but I have a question.
Please.
We're all excited about this topic, obviously.
So the detection of somebody under the influence of sativa, is it different than under indica?
Not remarkably.
Ah, that's my question. Yeah,
that's your question. Good. Yeah. So just for scientific purposes, you're interested in the answer.
Well, someone's sleeping under indica. Right.
Exactly. You can't use the traditional sobriety testing kind of hardware to determine whether somebody is under the influence, right?
Correct, yeah. So the way that THC works in the body is that it is very rapidly expelled by the body, and it's also what's called lipophilic, so it binds to fat cells. And that really is a confounding effect for normal chemical-type drug tests, because THC can then bind to the fat in the body and be slowly expelled over time. So you've probably heard, you know, urinalysis screenings can be positive for over a month since you've last used.
Right.
Saliva tests can be positive for up to about 48 hours since you last used. And then, you know, blood tests are about 2 weeks. And so you can't simply look at the amount of THC in the body and try to derive the experienced impairment from that number. And there have been many studies that have validated that point. And so what we did is we really looked at the science, and we tried to understand what is the right way to measure impairment from cannabis. And it turns out that all other drugs work the way that cannabis does, and that they bind to receptors in the brain. And so the amount of substance that you can measure in the body is not actually related to the impairment that is experienced. So we really need to rethink as a whole how we think about impairment as we move down this path of legalization, if that's what we're going to do.
So you studied 350 people, and by monitoring their eye movement, you get some kind of level of imbibement, or you get some kind of level of intoxication.
Impairment.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's not just impairment that I think you're looking at. You're trying.
What
to,
are you looking at? That's it. Yeah, criteria.
Are you looking at just impairment, or you're looking at a level of being absorbed in the body, and so tracking eye movements will lead to some kind of measurement of impairment. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. So each drug has a unique way in which it impacts eye movement. And so what we were doing in the study is measuring how cannabis, in particular, impacts eye movement, and creating then algorithms that can detect that within the data that we capture using our device.
So does the industry now, or potentially, will it have a standard in which it'll accept your results as, you know, valid?
Yeah. So the tests that we're using have been in use for about 45 years by law enforcement officers. So these are the track my finger tests you've probably seen on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're looking for are these certain signs and symptoms of impairment that can manifest in the eyes. And so what we've done basically is we've created an automated version of those tests, and it runs in a VR headset. The VR headset captures eye movement data and video throughout that testing process, and then we analyze the data on the back end to look for the signs of impairment, the same ones that law enforcement officers do. And so these are currently accepted ways to look at impairment for cannabis. And we've been able to very, very accurately create models that can detect this within eye movement data.
So it's slightly off the beaten path, but it just came into my mind. Does it affect blind people the same way, the same results? If somebody was...
So we can't test blind people. You have to be able to watch a stimulus move. Okay. So if someone that's clinically blind, we can't test them. Right. And so there would have to be some other process. But you're also not driving probably or operating machinery. Right. And so, we're really focused on this driving and working while impaired problem.
So let's move to the more practical application of this. Is there now a standard, like, you know, with blood alcohol level, there's a level that is generally, you know, recognized as you're drunk.
Yeah.
Is there a level of intoxication from cannabis that is viewed as impairment?
Yeah, so this is a bit of a sticky issue, actually. There are some states that have decided, and Montana is one of them, that there should be some amount of THC in the body beyond which you're determined to be impaired. Unfortunately, there's no science behind that at all. And so, in all their wisdom, the legislature said, well, we need some way to do cannabis DUI, so this is the best we've got. And it's really kind of crazy. The International Association of Chiefs of Police, the National Institutes of Justice, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration have all come out with reports that say, please don't use these, they're called per se limits. That's the 0.08 for alcohol. Don't use per se limits for cannabis. They don't make any sense. There's no science behind them. So some states have still decided to do that, and it's pretty silly. And now they're being challenged all across the country, of course, because they don't make any sense.
So somebody who would purchase your equipment, we have law enforcement, will have some guideline that when they're using it to determine whether they have an enforceable, offense to track and to monitor or to enforce.
So the way it's worked with human conducted tests is that if these signs and symptoms of impairment are present, then you're determined to be impaired and they take further action, whatever that should be. So we're operating on that same paradigm for now, where if we detect these signs and symptoms of impairment, we simply say, hey, you've failed this test. And then from there, the law enforcement officer or the business owner can say, well, we think that you're impaired based on failing this test, and they can, take further action.
I'm more interested actually in the business application than the law enforcement application.
Yeah.
I mean, is there concern, for example, about surgeons, pilots, Uber drivers, people that are working in laboratories. I mean, it's legal to have it, right?
And it's legal to use.
In many states and Canada and federally, right? You can use it. So you can go out in your break and get high but and come back in.
But it's about abuse, not use, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've tried to really lean in on is this is allowing employees to use what is now a legal substance safely rather than use it unsafely, show up to work high, put someone else's life at risk.
Right.
And so that's really what we're trying to prevent are these, we're focused on safety sensitive positions. So industries might include mining, manufacturing, construction, oil and gas, logging, things like that, where if you show up high, you might kill the guy next to you.
Pilots.
You don't want
pilots.
Yeah. Great example.
But there are a lot of folks that are using cannabis for medicinal purposes, for pain, for chronic pain, right? Somebody that has a chronic back problem. So it's not, you don't use alcohol for a chronic back problem.
Yeah.
So how do you create a guideline that's fair and not
penalizing somebody? How do you know that failing your test really means you're high and capable of performing your job to a satisfactory level?
Yeah, I mean, so we know that extremely accurately because what we did in our study is we brought in people in a sober state. Theoretically, we actually caught someone that were not. And then we got them high using recreational available cannabis, supervised. So we know, we've got their eye movement when they're sober. We've got their eye movement when they're high. We know what those differences are, and we can very accurately detect those differences. I think what's important to perhaps explain, too, is that what we're disrupting is this paradigm of a business saying, well, you can't use cannabis at all, right? They're saying now that in your example, this is a medicine that you can no longer use because you're going to be operating equipment. We have a zero tolerance policy for THC.
Right.
This allows you to prove that you're not high on the job and then go home and use your prescription medicine on your off time.
Well, particularly since it lasts in your body for a long time if you use some other ways of measurement, right?
Exactly.
If you did a hair follicle analysis.
Do people metabolize THC differently? Like, does body types?
Totally. Yeah.
How does that work?
Huge challenges with body type differences. So as I said, THC is lipophilic. It binds to fat in the body. You've got people that have a higher BMI are going to have much more sort of non-psychoactive THC being leached into their blood at any given time if they're a heavy user, whereas someone who's very fit would have very, you know, much less. So there's actually been studies that have shown that people can be positive above the established limits for some in some states that we mentioned for up to 2 weeks after they last used.
Wow.
Which is insane.
Right, right.
And so now you've got someone who hasn't been high for 2 weeks driving around and they get a DUI and they're totally unimpaired. So what we need to establish is that they're impaired actively, not that they previously used. And so, yeah, the body type issue, you know, there's issues with tolerance, there's issues with BMI. We've even found, you know, some signal on, like, how old someone is, and that could be history of use as well, as to, like, sort of how good are they at metabolizing THC? Sort of what's their metabolic rate of THC?
I see. What about gender differences?
We haven't found much in gender, although women tend to have a higher content of fat in the body, and so there tends to be sort of more non-psychoactive THC and THC metabolites.
You don't
blood.
Say that around women, do you?
How about delivery? Delivery.
No comment.
The media of delivery, meaning flour versus tincture versus
which is another
gummies.
You know, incredibly important point. When you smoke THC, the THC content in your body spikes really, really high. Mm-hmm. So the limit that Montana and most other states have established is 5 nanograms per milliliter. And when you smoke it, it can go up to about 100 nanograms per milliliter. Mm. But then it also falls off very quickly. So within about 45 minutes or an hour, you're probably under that 5 nanograms per milliliter line, even though your high is still continuing for about, you know, much longer period.
Got it.
For edibles, they metabolize differently in the body. And so you never really reach that 5 nanogram limit, but you can be insanely impaired.
Right.
And of course, the high can linger for like 6 hours.
Right.
So it's an incredibly – that issue is incredibly confounding for tests that look at the amount of THC in the body.
The gaze test really kind of level sets everything.
Totally. Yeah. And so our test works just as well for edibles as it does for smoked or vaped or, you know, whatever your method of consumption is.
You're measuring the impairment effect regardless of what the input is, right?
Right.
You can, you know, because people, all the things that you said, you metabolize it differently depending on your fat content in your body. You do different things. Some people make home versions of things. I know people in states where it has more flexible in here go and buy, flowers and make their own stuff. And who knows what, you know, how that's regulated. But in your job, you have an interesting combination of responsibilities and challenges. You're not just producing a new, you know, bagel to go in the bagel market. You're producing a technology, and then you're entering a field that doesn't have the established, you know, framework. And so you have to do, as I see it, you know, advocacy work and lobbying work and education work with lots and lots of people, not only from a legislative point of view, but from, you know, a business acceptance point of view.
It's truly a disruptive technology, and I didn't really understand to what extent that was true until I started, you know, getting into this and having these conversations. But, you know, we've educated lawyers, prosecutors, judges, business owners, law enforcement officers, you know, all over the country,
right,
in the course of doing this work. And it's fascinating to me that, you know, this isn't better known. One, like, this science is freely available. There's
Not better known. And I'm sure you run into a lot of business owners who just say, we're just going to have a zero tolerance policy. That's just simple. It's easy. And you know,
but they're only means of testing. Are you high?
Yeah, so there's two problems with that, actually.
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, I understand how you know, business owners in Montana and other places might be. I don't want anybody getting high. I'm working for me.
Well, they don't have, but they can get high before they get here. Right.
I mean, it's not.
Or they
I
mean, get
not,
there. Sorry.
It's not a logical argument.
Right.
I'm not saying it's logical. I'm just saying that's just the way a lot of people react to this.
Which is causing really severe hiring challenges for all these business owners.
Right.
Totally. And the other side, they're saying, business owners are saying, well, THC is legal, so we don't care about THC anymore. We're just going to take it off our drug panel. And then, so in those cases, they're totally exposed to impaired workers as a result. Right. So it's an extremely challenging issue. And then the other one that I'll mention is some states are actually legislating that THC users are protected as a class, which means you as a business owner can no longer test your employees and take adverse action for the simple presence of THC.
Right, because it's legal in the states where they're doing it.
That's like telling someone they can't have a beer after work.
Right.
And so our product allows for someone to maintain a safe workforce with a verifiably sober employee and allow them to live their life on the weekends.
So tell me the use case. So I am employer of, let's say, a person, people that work at a bar. How does your product work with, let's say, the owner? Do they, employee comes in and do they immediately take a test? Right? How does it work?
Yeah, it depends
on
how
the conversation.
It depends on how you want to deploy it. So, you know, we're having conversations with employers all over the country and they all sort of have a different idea of what they want to do. Some want to do this proactive screening where they say, okay, we're going to test everybody before they start shift, or we're going to test five people at the start of every day. And some are saying, okay, well, we only really care if, like, we only want to do post-accident screening, or we want to do reasonable suspicion screening. We're, you know, this technology, I think, enables proactive screening in a way that has really been impossible historically. And so my hope is we can move towards the proactive methodology and away from the retroactive post-accident type of response.
Right. So, like, you walk in for your shift at the mine, and your supervisor has 10 headsets.
Right.
And they say, okay, guys, before we start the shift, let's do our THC screening.
Is this like a VR head?
Yes.
It looks exactly like an Oculus or any other VR headset that you've seen.
And how long does it take for the results to be displayed or shared with the employer?
From the time you press the start test button, it takes 6 minutes to have results in hand. So it's a total game changer from that perspective, too, whereas you're historically waiting for your analysis test to come back or whatever.
And so in the 6 minutes, does the tester and the testee get the results at the same time?
So the test subject would never see the results. They go, we've got a mobile app, and so the mobile app really controls the whole what's happening with the test. So the test administrator would get the results on the mobile app, but the test subject would never see them unless they get shared.
Right.
They come in, and if they want to share them, I guess they would.
What are the test results? What does the screen interface look like? Is it like a numerical value? Like they're between X and this?
No. So basically, it's a list of the tests that we do, pass, fail on each of the tests. And then up at the top of the screen, we say no impairment suspected or impairment suspected.
Okay.
So you mentioned talking to lawyers. To me, there's lots of legal.
Tons of legal things here.
For example, you're a heavy machine operator in a mine, and you're really needed that day. And you get tested, and the person responsible, it says, you know, likely impaired, but he really needs you, so he ignores the results of the test.
And there's an accident.
And then there's an accident.
Yeah, that would be a challenging issue for that employer.
Yeah. You know, and
you know, at the end of the day, we are hoping that people take this seriously and take appropriate action based on the test results, but that's out of our hands.
Right. Let me flip over to something else.
You
work in the governor's office. You are now running a seed-funded startup. What's your background for doing this job? And, you know, you seem very technically fluent at this point. What was the ramp-up?
Give
for
us
you,
bio.
Ken. Yeah. Give us a little background.
Give us the bio.
How you got in the room today here.
Yeah, it has been a steep learning curve, I'll say. I've had a couple other small businesses in the past. Had a marketing firm and a web app development company, a mobile app development company, and a search engine optimization business. Right before I was in the governor's office, I was the head of marketing at an infrared optics manufacturing company.
Right. So you know that piece.
So the time in government was a bit of a departure from kind of what had been my career, but really, really fascinating experience that I thoroughly enjoyed, and I feel like we did great work. When that was over, you know, when Bullock was termed out, I really felt this need to tackle this problem. This looked like not only a huge safety problem, a huge potential challenge that could reverse legalization, a huge opportunity to improve justice outcomes for cannabis users, and also a huge market opportunity. Like, there's a big business here.
Right.
And so, I mean, it looked really interesting.
My mind is spinning about, for example, if I was sales and marketing person for Gaze, I would be out there talking to every drone company. I go to the federal government, so you got all these drone operators out in the desert sitting in these
Peyote.
These mobile units, you know, bored out of their mind. You wouldn't want them impaired when they have to conduct drone strikes, for example. Right. I'm sure they're tested, but they may not be tested for cannabis.
They probably are. So it being a federally Schedule I substance still.
Right. Okay.
Anybody that's doing federal contracts or is regulated by a federal agency is probably and is doing safety-sensitive work is probably being drug tested for THC.
But through the traditional
do you have this metabolite in your urine type of method, which are, you know, deeply imperfect. There's lots of ways to cheat that test.
Sure.
Really what needs to happen in order for our test to be accepted at the federal level is change in the federal legal status of the substance, which, you know, who knows if or when that'll happen.
Sure. Because there's a lot of controversy on whether it should be. Change on both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely. I mean,
is the technology that you're using something that's specific, that you own it? Is it patented by the company?
Yeah, we have a patent pending, international patents pending, for basically the way that we come at the problem. So it's method of how we establish or how we look at the data and establish impairment.
Wow. Are there competitors for what you're doing?
There are a few companies that are kind of dabbling in the eye movement as it relates to impairment space. Nobody's doing exactly what we're doing. We have a really fantastic, I think, technology stack in that we have a portable headset that, you know, doesn't require a computer. We have we built this in order for it to be portable, robust, very, very rapid, and very accurate. And so nobody is doing quite what we're doing. A couple have kind of a desktop mounted eye movement reading system. But most are doing what can be best called a deviation from normal methodology. So they look at eye movement on a regular basis, and then they try to look at whether or not eye movement deviates from that, what has become a pattern of normal eye movement behavior. And what we're doing actually is looking for the indicators of impairment that result from substance use on cannabis and then, you know, other drugs.
It would seem to me, and you mentioned it earlier, you know, there's global application for this. And there's some other markets around the world that are much more homogeneous markets in a way in which, the regulatory framework and the rules and regulations might be easier to establish than when you have 50 states and then all these different jurisdictions.
I didn't realize the extent to which each state dictates its own drug testing policy.
Yeah. Right.
And it's really stunning. I mean, it's just an absolute mishmash of policy, and it's extremely complicated to navigate, even for our customers. You know, our customers are like, okay, well, what if we want to implement this? How do we do it legally? How do we do it safely? How do we not
We're nine states.
Yeah.
Half of them have this, half of them don't have it. The laws are different in all those places.
So we've actually partnered with a national employment law firm, one of the largest, called Ogletree. Mm-hmm. And they are providing free legal consultation to all of our customers to try to get us over this hurdle. And so that's a really important, I think, piece of this equation, is that not only – you know, our business is saying, yeah, we want to use this, but now they've got to figure out how to do it in a way that they're not going to get in trouble. And that's really that other piece.
Well, you did the study up in Canada. Canada might be an interesting market for this.
Yeah, we've got, we just onboarded a new sales rep in Canada. We've got some really great interest there. We're looking at other markets as well, including we've got interest from Mexico. We've got a headset in New Zealand. Australia is interesting. South Africa. Kazakhstan weirdly has reached out. South Africa.
Yeah.
Germany is going to become a recreational cannabis country, we think.
Do you think the Scandinavian countries would be very interested in this because they're concerned about safety?
How about the Benelux countries?
I'm interested in that. Does the healthcare field, like if you're a surgeon, do you get drug tested?
I don't
think they do.
Yeah, not typically.
They don't?
I don't think so.
It probably depends on the healthcare system you're a part of, but best of my knowledge,
you're doing brain surgery on someone, heart surgery, you know, replacement surgeries, you know, you would think that you would want to be sure the person was...
people are using these non-traditional, like acid for microdosing for depression.
Yeah.
So some, and as well as cannabis.
Well, we know, dentists generally aren't going to kill you, but dentists have a high rate of, depression and microdosing, and
they do,
and have high suicide rates.
It's true.
I'm curious. I don't know what your experience has been in the healthcare field, but that's one area where I think would be very important to be sure that the person who's going to be operating on you is
interesting.
Is there ever a thought that your technology and your patent, if it was integrated with a broader testing kind of set of applications, would be the better way to go versus going it alone?
Yeah, we've explored things like driver monitoring cameras in cars becoming very common. They look for whether or not you're drowsy. So a future thing could be we use our algorithms to monitor the eye movement and try to detect these indicators of impairment. And I don't think we can do all of the same ones that we do, but we can probably do some of them.
Interesting. So you need a camera.
Yeah.
And you need, and the idea of the headset is it's just completely contained, right? There's no distraction.
Exactly. The headset kind of provides a great environment for us to run these because we can precisely control the light conditions.
Right.
We can, one of the tests we do is actually measuring the pupil's response to light. And so that really helps us with that test. That's one of the ones that I don't think we could do in a car because, you're going to be constantly exposed to varying levels of light. But there are other indicators of impairment that I think could be possible to look at in an automotive application. So that's something we're interested in. There's others too, like there could be a need for a high throughput type of application where you've got, say, hundreds of people walking through a line every day or something to get into a job site. And you need to rapidly screen all of them. And so something that's faster could be faster than 6 minutes per test, could be something that we're really interested in. And trying to figure that out would be definitely
interesting.
It's
a fascinating
change.
There's so many facets to it.
Yeah.
You're really creating the category and the product at the same time.
So what's your next biggest challenge you're facing as a growing business? You're moving from seed capital and startup into hopefully revenue generating, right? So what's your challenge?
We launched the product about a month ago, and the biggest challenge has always been education in this business. It's always surprising to me when we talk to someone, like a judge who should know this, that they don't know this. And so we're doing a lot of education. Most of my day is spent on sales-related activities, so trying to, get our customers educated to the point where they're comfortable buying the product and then kind of getting them over the line to understand how it can be used legally in their jurisdiction.
Right, because there's still challenges with alcohol, as we just pointed
Absolutely.
Out. Most surgeons don't get tested.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just common that in every profession people have developed drinking problems or, overuse of prescription medication, that sort of thing. And this is, I don't know. I don't know if I'd want a surgeon operate on me on a Monday morning after
no.
the weekend.
Let's do a quick ID. Our guest is Ken Fickler. He is the CEO of Gaize, spelled G-A-I-Z-E, and the website is G-A-I-Z-E.ai.
Correct.
Let's talk about the AI.
Yeah.
Because this is an exciting time for AI, and
it's
a scary time for a lot of people. So talk a little bit about AI.
We're sort of accidental beneficiaries, I think, of the AI interest. We'll see if that translates to sales or extra capital from fundraising. But so really what we do is the magic sauce in our product is measuring the eye movement data that we get out of the headset using AI algorithms. So we have a series of AI algorithms that look at the data, and those are looking at basically, how are the eyes moving in reference to what we know sober eyes and what we know impaired eyes look like?
Mm.
So using that, we can very precisely pick out the indicators of impairment that we look for. And so we run 6 different tests, and each test has sort of a unique eye movement indicator that we're looking for. And each substance category has a relatively unique biosignature, different way in which the eye movement changes in response to it. We've been really focused on cannabis historically for this company, but moving forward, we're actually branching out from cannabis. We've done this big cannabis trial. We're now capturing data on ketamine. We've captured some alcohol data. We're going to capture data on other classes of substance so we can continue to expand the capabilities of the product.
That's fantastic. Right. So the applications become that much broader.
Yeah.
So by monitoring eye movement and then applying AI algorithms, you might be a digital version of diagnostic tests that use antigens or whatever to detect, you know, flu or viruses or sexually transmitted diseases or whatever. You'll be able to maybe in 1 6-minute test for 4 or 5 different variables based on the eye movement and that being fed into an AI algorithm platform. Am I right?
Yeah, you're touching on something that's really, really interesting to me. And there's another company actually that's using our exact same hardware platform.
Yeah.
We're not the manufacturer. You know, we've just built software.
Right.
So our same hardware platform is being used by another company that is doing is monitoring eye movement for signs of head injuries and concussion in particular. Mm-hmm. So this is really great and useful for a sports team, for example, when you have some big hit on the field and you want to make sure your player's okay, pop the headset on, and in a couple minutes, now you know, rather than, I hope he's okay, send him back out.
Because he wants to go play, right?
Right.
They want back on the field.
Right. It feels like that's a huge application.
Huge. Yeah, and we see many, many applications within sort of the medical space to do eye readings and trying to diagnose certain conditions. I mean, there are many conditions that can be diagnosed using eye movement.
Well, concussions are one of them.
Concussions
right?
are a huge
right.
one.
You know,
yeah.
and so a quarterback gets, a concussion. You know, the Miami quarterback who had 5 of them gets knocked out in the field. They
right.
drag him off. There's a TV timeout.
Yep.
By the time there's a TV timeout and whatever, you could have, it's 5-6 minutes by the time they're a play or two further in the game, and you will have a
right.
have a reading whether this person is impaired or not at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah, and getting a repeat concussion is really bad.
Yes.
I mean, that's severely bad. That starts to create sort of compounding trauma in the brain. And so that's an application that we find fascinating and we're very much interested in moving towards.
Yeah, well, that would have, to me, less of these 50 state issues and
yeah.
Whether it's legal or not legal or whatever. Tracing somebody who has a concussion or somebody that has some other kind of...
junior athletics, right?
Yeah, high school.
High school.
Certainly high school athletics.
Yeah, what if you're a law enforcement officer or a first responder and you come upon an accident, somebody's stumbling around, you don't know if they're drunk or if they've got a head injury. Well, now you can pop the headset on and you can find out.
Because they present themselves in a very similar condition.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know, and some of the police overreaction to situations they're not sure what they are turn out to be, as we all know, not what they thought they were.
Yeah.
It wasn't a violent armed person. It was a person having a seizure of some sort.
There's a video that's been trending for the last week or so of a guy in Pennsylvania who was stopped and accused of cannabis DUI, was not high, but the officer thought he was. And so now that department's being sued by this guy for wrongful imprisonment. And so these are just really bad outcomes that, I think can easily be completely eliminated
right.
using appropriate technology.
Because as you know, and you've shared with our listeners, the education process is incomplete.
Yeah.
And you just can't say, I can look at somebody and know whether they're high or not. Or I can look
right.
at some, the people that act, that are funny and act weird. And, every barista in New York City would say, was high whether they are or not. But, you have no way to judge that, right?
And in a best case scenario, you're relying on human observations. You're relying on your subjective opinion.
Right.
And you're running tests that are fraught with human error. So
Arnie brings up such a great point because
yeah.
there are some industries that you shouldn't even come to work unless you're rapid eye movement.
Right, right. But then there are people, for example, for years, I mean, a good example, for us in the older generation, Dean Martin was always thought to be a drunk,
right.
And he played the drunk on TV and always had a drink in his hand, but he wasn't.
Wow.
That was just a whole
shtick he had.
That was
yeah,
a shtick sure. he had.
Or Cheech and Chong.
There were a couple of other people that did the same kind of thing, and would
Foster
act that
Brooks.
Way. Foster Brooks was another one, would stumble over, and he wasn't drinking, he was just part
Cheech
of it.
Cheech and Chong.
For
your generation, Wiz Khalifa.
Yeah.
My kids. Ken, give us some background. Where are you from? How'd you get to Montana? Are you from Montana?
I'm actually from Montana. Yeah, I grew up in the Bitterroot Valley, so just about a half an hour.
Your parents from
south.
Here?
Neither parent is from here. They both ended up at the University of Montana.
From?
My mom's from Virginia. My dad's family is from New Jersey.
Where?
He's
I'm from New Jersey.
Okay, hold on. I just read this.
it doesn't.
I can't remember the name of the little town.
Doesn't matter.
It was very, very close to New York City.
Okay, that's where
I'm from.
Okay.
Scott's from.
And then you grew up here.
Yeah. So my dad was born in North Dakota, and then they moved to Montana. And my dad's dad was a preacher, so they kind of moved around a lot.
Okay.
And they landed in Montana at one point. Ended up, my dad and my mom met at the University of Montana, and the rest is history.
Were you educated there? Were you educated?
No, I actually went to MSU.
Did you?
I went over the hill, yeah.
My son went. Got a great education. No disrespect to U of M. And then what was your course of study? How are you doing what you're doing today? Like, what's your path? We have people that are in college that listen to this show, so we want to
My
help
path
them.
Has been non-traditional from the start. I graduated with a business major, business management, and international business minor. I also took as much Arabic as I could at MSU and studied abroad in Morocco for almost a year. From there, I got fascinated with technology and thought technology was going to be one of the driving forces in the world. And so I really have leaned in on that, even though I don't have I wasn't trained to
sure.
be a software developer or whatever. But I've become very competent, I think, in the technology space. And I've trained myself to identify interesting opportunities. And this has been the latest one.
Phenomenal. It's such an industry. It like right. you really are creating the category and the product, which is cool.
So as you travel around and talk to potential customers in Canada, Europe, is it an advantage to be from Montana or a disadvantage?
Yeah, I think it's mostly a disadvantage, unfortunately. There's this pervasive opinion that technology doesn't get built in Montana. If you're not from Silicon Valley, you're not building technology, which is 100% wrong. And even people in Silicon Valley anymore would tell you that.
Right.
It's, and this was manifested very strongly when I was raising capital. It was difficult to raise capital, even for me.
Well, that's always been a challenge here in Montana.
Yeah, but reason. I know all the people who provide capital in the state of Montana.
Right.
Personally, like we're on a very first name basis.
Right.
Friends,
that's the nice
all that.
Thing about it. Right.
And it was still hard for me. So like somebody who doesn't have my level of connections, it would be impossible. That's something that was really, really hard. It hasn't really worked against us in talking with customers, although I wonder if things could move faster if we were in a more traditional technology center. Right. As often as not, they're like, "Oh wow, I took a vacation in Montana once. It was awesome." I'm like,
"Right,
it's a great lifestyle here."
Well, the thing that I found when I was at the World Trade Center, a couple of things that resonate from what you said. One is that even the Board of Investment in Montana does very little investment in Montana.
Totally.
That's always
zero.
A challenge.
Yeah.
And then secondly, there are certain sectors in Montana that get a boost from being here, like people that make hot tubs or make things. It's like a Swiss watch.
Yeah.
There's this belief that if, that some guy that looks like Jeremiah Johnson sitting in his cabin making fly rods or making bows or making hot tubs, and therefore they're like custom-made things.
Totally.
Sims has gotten away with that. But I think you're absolutely right. The technology thing is very biased. It's New York, Silicon Valley, San Francisco, L.A.,
Miami anymore, but not Missoula, Montana.
No, it's a little bit. Even though Bozeman had Right Now Technologies, and we have some offshoots of name companies like Oracle here and whatever. It's still not viewed in a sense as a technology hub, so to speak.
So exactly. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Ken Fickler. He is the CEO of Gaze. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Ken Fickler.
I want to talk to you about money. $1.2 million, to some people, it's a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money.
Yeah, it goes fast.
If you're trying to launch something globally, even Nike doesn't have the ability to take a new shoe and put it in every market in the world.
Yep.
They have to ramp up to do it.
Yep.
So you need more money at some point. What's your thinking about how that's going to progress?
Yeah, so we raised $1.2 million as a seed round. That's even, a relatively small seed round as far as technology startups go. And so we had intended to raise some additional capital around now. And we, based on the capital markets being kind of not the best. We've managed to extend our runway, and so we are going to, I think, raise a little bit of additional capital sometime soon, and that'll probably look like an A round, and we'll talk to all the normal players for that.
Well, there also might be some industry players, you know, as you talk, not just cannabis, but as you mentioned, some of these other industries, like, NCAA might be a source of funding if they're taking concussion protocols and other things seriously, or the NFL.
Sure.
You know, where it's, you know, it's almost every game somebody's going to get knocked unconscious.
Big companies that are in our target industries are absolutely of interest as strategic investors.
Sure.
Yeah. So we're having some of those conversations now, and we'll continue that. And
so if one of our listeners wants to find out more about what Gaze is doing, or would like to make an investment in the company, or just is just curious, how do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so our website is www.gaze.ai. You can also email me at ken@gaze.ai.
Fantastic.
Direct to the CEO. Yeah,
how big is your staff?
I've got five.
Five.
And four full-time.
And you're hiring?
We are considering expanding the sales team a little bit. Sure. You know, with the capital constraints in mind, we're certainly gathering resumes in preparation for being able to do that very soon. Yeah.
We have, you know, in our remaining minute, the interesting thing that you had brought up before a little bit with technology and people having tech jobs here with CTG and
ATG and Cognizant.
Right, Cognizant. And so they're there, right? They're here.
Right.
You just got to, it's a lot of competition for them.
It's just a perception issue. There's plenty of technology things going on here, but Montana is not viewed that way.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not portrayed that way in any media, right? It's Yellowstone, a river runs through it or whatever. It's, you know, it's fighting
it's
over land, shooting, you know, cattle and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Taking bodies and dumping them in the Tetons so you don't, so there's no
political. Or witness protection.
Yeah. That's how I got here.
I think they both think that's how we got here.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, Ken, you've been a delightful guest. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure.
We'll have you back.
Great. I'd love that.
Okay. Arnie, I'll see you next week.
Scott, take care. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.